Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis, and this is Literary Viewpoints. And I think the sun might come out. I'm not even sure. But before I start, let me once again wish my heartfelt hope for the people in Tribeca, my area in New York City, where there was a terrorist attack yesterday. And I truly hope that when they decide to prosecute this guy, they do it the right way, and that he never gets out, never sees the light of day. And my heart goes out to the families and friends of those people that were killed, all eight of them. And I hope the rest of the people in the hospital survive and go home very soon. So from us at MJ Network, we wish you only the best. Okay, we have one of the greatest authors here, the author of Recall and Reload, David McCallum, as a real winner here. And it says on my screen, Red Harmon is a guy I'd want on my side. That's what Mark Cameron of the New York Times said. That's not even bad. And to save his family in the free world, Red Harmon is back in the line of fire. And let's talk about first, David. First of all, welcome. I'm so glad you're here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's always great to be with you.
Yeah, it's great. And I was like, can you give our listeners something about Recall, so how you created Red Harmon and his wife, Lori? This is really an interesting story.
No, absolutely, absolutely. So, and I apologize. The question you just mentioned, just like a synopsis of Recall.
Yeah, just tell everybody about Recall so that when they want to, you know, to have the series, they read them both. And let's start from the beginning.
So
both of them.
Yeah, Recall starts out with introducing Red Harmon, a devoted father of three, a husband, and in, of all places, a Walmart parking lot, he is attacked by a group of muggers, and he ends up killing, actually, two of the muggers, almost the third one. But a few minutes later, he just doesn't remember any of it, and so he acted so swiftly, so violently, and skillfully that it's obvious. Well, it's obvious to the reader, not necessarily immediately obvious to Red, but it's obvious to the reader that he's been trained, that there's something going on in his background that of which he was unaware. So it triggers an investigation, him looking into his past, and at the same time, ghosts from his past end up surfacing. There's an attempt on his life. They end up, although not being able to kidnap him, they are able to kidnap his wife. And so there's a whole plot thread that weaves us all the way and carries us all the way through Tehran, a rescue operation, and they weave in the whole nuclear threat that Iran is that growing threat coming out of Iran. And then they end up, like the book should, they end up successful. Red is, it wraps up with a little bit of mystery still surrounding who exactly was trying to come after Red and his family. But Red's able to rescue Lori, save the free world, and it sets it up nicely for Reload, which is the next book.
Well, Recall really got me. I love Recall, but this one really got me because you put in some really great twists and stuff that nobody's going to expect. So the start of Reload allows readers to know that poor Lori, something's going to change the lives of the Harmons forever. Why do they want to go after them again? Why do they want to go after her? That was really good.
Well, that's part of the whole mystery, because like what I tried to do with Reload, I mean, Reload is a much more complex plot. There are three different points of view. You've got three different, and largely from the three organizations or countries involved. You've got Red Harmon coming at it from his organization. We call it the Debt. It's just a fusion cell. Which is a hub of cooperation from different agencies within our government and even other governments when needed. Then you've got China and you've got North Korea. And so I've got a character, a main character from both North Korea and also from China involved there, and these three different points of view and their plot, the plot thread ends up coming together in an operation. So about the op doesn't actually happen until about a third, maybe a halfway through the book, because it's all building to this op. But in the op, all three of those plot threads get woven together. All three of the characters are involved in one way or another. And it's very interesting because I enjoyed setting up parallels between Red, between the gentleman from, he was a sergeant, a Songsa in the North Korean Army. He and Red's motivations are they run parallel. They're both very devoted to family, but you know, this Songsa in the North Korean Army it really grates against all of his state loyalties that he's just been brainwashed with his entire life. Great, just cooperating with the debt in order to be able to, you know, save his family. And then the opposite of that happening with the main character out of China, where his motivation is largely just revenge, and kind of how that has affected him, his life, and ultimately the outcome of it as well. And once the book's wrapped up.
That was amazing. Also, I felt like I was listening to the news. I mean, just North Korea is always in the news, and China too. And I'm saying, like, this could actually happen with that lunatic that runs that country.
Yeah, it definitely could, and people don't realize. There's a lot about North Korea people don't realize, but they do counterfeit. Yeah. And I wrapped that up in the book as well. But they're one of the leading producers of extremely high quality $100 bills. They call them a super note. I mean, the quality is very difficult to discern from what the note looks like. And I kind of wrap in China, because China is always kind of helping out North Korea, and they've got some underground non-official banking systems where money can be more easily laundered. And so it's a very plausible plot.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's funny, you go to the bank and you take out money, and sometimes you don't look at the thing and say, well, you know, should I choose my bills? And then the last time I went there, I got two $100 bills. I go, wait a minute, are these real or not real? And then, you know, you go into the bank and you say, it's a fake you just gave them to me. I mean, because you don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
most of the time
they take that little pen and they say, you know, oh, it's real. But I wonder how accurate that little brown pen is to see if it's really real, or if these people really know what they're looking for, what they're looking at. Oh yeah, it's real. Don't worry about it.
That's only one way. I mean, a good counterfeit can easily defeat that pen test.
That must be fun to learn how to do something like that. What is the definition of the wet team, and why do they want to get poor Laurie? See, Laurie's got a double personality here, people. We're just going to tell you what it is, but yeah.
Well, I'll go ahead and I'll spoiler alert, because the answer to that question, I mean, a wet team is the definition of a wet team is not a spoiler. A wet team is it comes from kind of the idea of wet works, meaning the letting of blood, and so a wet team is a team of assassins, and it's kind of it's a broadly used term, and it can be applied to most anything. It's usually not applied to, you know, military organizations. It's usually applied in more like covert, in more the covert vernacular. And why are they trying to get Laurie? Now that is a little bit of a spoiler, but that's fine.
We won't tell them
much of it.
No,
oh, you don't want me to.
Don't tell them, because then, you know, they're going to want, you know, I can't tell them everything. So if I say anything that's a spoiler, I just come up with these questions just to prove I read the book, people.
Well, I'll say this. I won't go through any spoilers, but I'll say this, that Laurie is not what she seems.
That's what I thought. That's what I was going to say. And that bothered me. a lot, but that's beside the point. I sort of figured that out.
Yeah.
But that's all I'll say. Yeah, I figured that. I'm terrible.
I usually figure things out,
so it's not good. That's okay.
I had originally a completely, I'll say this and I won't tell you how I originally ended the book, but it was quite different, I'll say it that way. And then my publisher and my agent came back and said, you know, you can't end it quite. It was interesting. They came back and they said, you know, this is really, you know, wow, hard hitting and something I never would have expected, but you know what, you might get some negative reviews. And so long story short was I rewrote the end of the book. So I dealt with Lori differently, just for you know, you've read the book, but again, without giving away any spoilers, I originally dealt with Lori differently at the end of the book, in a much more hard-hitting fashion. But so you were going to do that also. Yeah, this one is a bit more, I think, palatable for readers. But listen, you know, Lori comes out. I'll say that Lori, in the third book, she comes out in a much different light, in a much more positive light, I'll say it that way.
Well, I thought you were going to end it the other way without saying what it is that you ended the first way. Because
well,
I said about her. Yeah, that would have been interesting. That would have been interesting to start the third book to see if she's really as positive as you think she is. Or maybe
not. You got it. It's hard to talk about it without giving away spoilers, but no, it was a lot of fun, and honestly, either way, ending the book either way was fine, you know, and as always, I do believe that it was good feedback from the publisher, and so, you know, that's the way it ended.
You actually, you really can't tell, because even though you ended it however you ended it, you still leave your reader wondering, who is she? So you got the point. See, I told you
I
get it.
And sometimes, you know, does the character really know who they are? You know, there's a degree of mystery. Always going to be a degree of mystery surrounding Red. There's always going to be a degree of mystery surrounding Lori. I mean, they're husband and wife, but you know, I've been married for 20 some years, and you know, how well do I really know, you know, my wife? And so there's always going to be a degree of mystery. Yes, it's going to be amplified in the fiction, in the novel. But, you know, I don't ever want to get to the point where everything is always laid out and packaged up with a nice, neat bow on it. No one really likes those endings. People like a nice, satisfying ending, one that makes them feel like they accomplished something, that satisfies them.
Mm-hmm.
But no one ever likes every single little thread packaged up. And those little threads that you kind of leave maybe untouched, you know, minor threads, well, those things can lead into, and that's what I did, those things can lead into and actually help start and initiate the plot of your sequel.
Well, you've got some other people that are in this book that I liked, and some of them I didn't like. We've got Marksman, Carter, Janik, and Jameson. So they're part of his team, right? They're part of Red's team?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Which ones would you like to talk about? And then we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of North Korea and China. I've got that in front of me. Mm-hmm.
Oh no, and that I'd love to get into that specifically. But I really felt like I wanted to be able to use Marksman in this particular novel, and kind of wrap him up, because he was a little bit of a mystery in the last one. Well, he's one of the threads that is woven into this particular novel, and he is wrapped up. He is packaged. Like, you know who he is by the end of the book. Actually, by the end of the first few chapters, you know who he is and where his loyalties lie. And he's, you know, he's a very loyal friend of Red, and kind of goes to show just how far friendship can actually take you, even in a black ops thriller. Jameson is just kind of a new quirky character. He's a nerd, and he's you know what? But these guys are just the face of warfare in one sense will never change, but in other senses, the people involved in it are most definitely evolving. And so there is a lot that goes on in the cyber world. And so it's important to be able to pull in characters like Jameson, though he's not an operative. He's not jumping out of airplanes and pulling triggers, but the information, the support that he provides is absolutely critical. And so I think that it's important to be able to pull in characters like that because they've got, interest, they've got skin in the game just as much as anyone else. And but I'd really like to start, like, if it's okay with you, like, talk a little bit, like, where you were headed with China and North Korea. So if you have a specific question on that, let's go ahead and address it.
Well, I don't want to talk about too much of it. My question is,
okay,
what would happen, because we talked about the $100 bills, what would happen,
okay,
if they actually succeeded and putting them, how would that change or impact our financial security if they actually were able to pass, or maybe they do pass, $100 bills and nobody realized it? What would happen then?
Well, they do. I mean, their counterfeit operations are quite successful.
Yeah.
How successful, how much of a threat is it? I mean, most of our $100 bills are actually circulated outside the United States. And so what does it actually do to us? Could it potentially, I mean, number one, we need to identify it as a threat. It is just kind of like any computer hack is an attack on us. I think that we need to realize, you know, this is an attack on our economy. Now, is that one particular attack going to necessarily cripple us? Are there ways of negating its effect? Yes, there are. I mean, it's an important fact to understand that it is happening. It does weaken the value of our dollar. It does hurt our economy. Now, the rate at which North Korea is doing it is probably not the at a level where it's going to have any huge impact. But nonetheless, it is something that threatens our economic security. And that coupled with maybe, and this is how I wove it in with the book, coupled with China and their ability to launder huge amounts of money. I mean, because China is a large, I mean, well, it's, I don't know. I'm assuming they're probably our largest trade partner. But through that economic link with the United States and then the economic link between China and North Korea, there's a whole plot that's very plausible for a lot of money, basically to be able to magnify that effect for a lot of money to be successfully laundered. And once it's out there, I mean, it's very difficult to get it back.
It's so exciting to learn how to do all these things. I mean, I don't know how many novels I've read, but I know I learned how to do money laundering, hacking, and encrypting,
mm-hmm,
and all sorts of stuff. And there are days I said,
right,
I wish I had the software to do that. It's so interesting to learn all this stuff. It's not good, but yeah, if I ever decide to put it in a novel. So we've got Ko Chang, and he gets mixed up with this, and one of my favorite characters was Jellyfish. So why does he get mixed up? I love Jellyfish. I'm sorry. The name alone is great. So why do they let him? He goes into the prison. How come they keep letting him in? And they don't stop him. He's a cool character.
Now, Ko into the prison, you mean?
Does he go, the guards let him in each time he wants to go through?
Right. No, I'm sorry. I didn't quite understand your question. I do now. So what it is Ko is a medium level non-commissioned officer. He's a sergeant, and so he started out in North Korea just as a border guard, and so he's come up through the ranks, and he has been to Hwasong, which is a gulag, and he's actually spent time there previously, and he's coming back to Hwasong, but as the captain of the guard. So he is now the leading non-commissioned officer on camp. And so under him are all the guards. So he has the right, the authority to be at Hwasong and to be at that particular gulag. So he's had experience there in the past just because he's been stationed there, and now he's being restationed there, but they don't realize that his sister is a political prisoner. And so it's just coincidental that he gets restationed there, and then the CIA uses that coincidence. They say, well listen, you know, we're going to help you get your sister out. See, because in North Korea, if you have a close family member who has done something politically untouchable, such as what his sister had done, like if you stand in opposition to the regime, not just you, but your entire family will be put into a gulag, and potentially up to three generations. So the rule is generally like you, your children, and your grandchildren will be in the gulag. And even though they have done nothing wrong, but it's incentive, obviously. This is real. I mean, I believe it.
I believe it. I believe it, because he's crazy, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
And so, like, I had to be able to come up with a plausible way for him to be able to be captain of the guard, you know, of the gulag, yet not be wrapped up with his sister. And so his sister had actually, in order to protect, when she had kind of thought that things were going against her, she actually had broken ties with the family, changed her name, and she did end up getting caught, obviously. But that way they did not know that it was actually Ko's sister. But the CIA did. They were able to figure it out, and they were able to use it to help coerce Ko to cooperate. So in exchange for, there's no spoilers in this. It's just part of the plot. But in exchange for cooperation, the idea is that he gets his sister out of the gulag, and the only safe place at that point is out in North Korea.
That's scary. Because just listening to news, yeah, he would do something like that because he's, oh God. So then we have the other guy, Zhang. He's also not.
Oh, yeah.
His family, this was a cooler character than that one. His family was executed, and he's trying to find out who is behind it. And he wants revenge, and I'm going to go to the bottom of the page. So you don't know which side he's on. That's the thing. So he's trying planning revenge. He doesn't know so which side is he on, and what does he have to do in order to get what he wants to find out
who it is?
His
own, yeah, he's on his own side. He's on no one's side but his own. He's a very vengeful man. And that actually, there are a lot of parallels between what happened in China and like he remembers, and I bring in a couple chapters of his backstory, because when Mao Zedong became leader in China, people look at China now and they don't necessarily remember how they have evolved a lot, and they are a much different government now than they were, but they are still communist. And when Mao Zedong came through, basically he tried to side with all the peasants, saying, you know, saying, hey, we're going to liberate you, but then ultimately ended up enslaving them as well. And so this Zhang is the gentleman who he remembers all his family's land being taken away, his father basically committing suicide just so his family didn't have to feed him. He's embittered, and he ends up he's embittered in many ways, and this is the motivation for him to lash back at the government. So even though he's an old man at present time, he still harbors this old resentment, and he just wants to do something to get back at the Chinese government, because he still sees them as they were, as the thieves and the murderers that they were. And so that's his goal. And so the fact that the CIA exploits that and uses that in order to bring about a an op within, well, it's kind of a cyber op in a way, but within China is kind of, that's the tool that they use, the motivation, that's the word I'm looking for, that they use.
So we have another character. I don't know if we're going to talk about this person. Who is Blue Tie? That was another interesting character.
Yeah, Blue Tie is the link. Blue Tie is the, we'll call him the handler for Zhang. So, Blue Tie is, and we're never really completely in the know whether Blue Tie is, like, who he's necessary. I mean, I'm saying CIA, but I mean, he's been turned, and so he is working for or with the CIA. He's a businessman. But he's a very ruthless businessman, and he's the one that handles Zhang and kind of sets up that whole op so that Zhang can then, he destroy one of several data centers. Zhang doesn't destroy all of them. Zhang is just responsible for one, but it's the Ministry of State Security's, one of the many Ministry of State Security's data centers. So it's a direct attack on their, essentially on their CIA, on their Central Intelligence Agency, but they call it an MSS, Ministry of State Security.
Well, we have Red learns about the mission. So what is the three, he puts together three ops at the same time. How do you do that, and how do you get people to communicate if they're going to be three operations at the same time and be able to communicate with them, and how did you create that? Because I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, see, the thing about this was Red didn't do, like, all three. So Red did essentially one, which was the one in North Korea. So behind the scenes, the CIA is essentially at the same time carrying out a joint strike within China. But Red's is the one within North Korea. North Korea is a little bit easier because their data warehouse, we'll say, they don't have the funds for the elaborate multi-site backups. And their printing press is actually co-located at this same facility, and so it's a prime op, target of opportunity, and so their job was to go in there and destroy it to the point where no data could be restored, and also destroy the printing press at the same time. So it's almost like two ops at the same time. So that's the only thing that Red has to worry about. But you mentioned Jellyfish. Like, you need somebody that knows Korean.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way I brought that in, I mean, South Korea has some crazy awesome special forces. And so you bring in this halfway crazy South Korean special operative into the mix. I mean, and we brought him in for language skills, but he's always running around basically with his hammer cocked, ready to shoot anything. I also tried to bring in some of the mentality of the South to the North, because I mean, we don't live under that constant threat like they do. I mean, the North is constantly rattling sabers and constantly talking about wanting to wipe the South off the map. And these guys are they grew up under that threat, so their mentality is different than ours when it comes to dealing with the North Korean threat. So I tried to bring that in and kind of help. And really, one of my biggest goals in this book was to bring light to the plight of the North Koreans. I mean, they're ordinary people, but they are just scared out of their mind. They're brainwashed, and they are just the entire gulag system. I mean, Amnesty International has estimated up to 200,000 prisoners are in their gulag system today, and that's immense. And just like the fact that you can be in prison for something that your grandfather did is unimaginable. But that's the injustice under which they live.
That is so scary, I know, because they've shown programs on television in North Korea, and they're showing these kids, showing people around and playing. I can imagine that when they come here to do the Olympics, the North Korean people, kids, that they don't ask to defect or figure out how to get not have to go back there. I mean, they look terrified just in the Olympics alone. And they're, I think they look terrified to lose. That's what's scary, because he's so out of his mind. The sad part is, I don't think he has a conscience. I don't think he knows what the word conscience means. That's even scarier. So we go back to Ko-Chang. He's a really nasty character. And he gets what he wants, but why does Jellyfish keep threatening him, which I think was really cool. I just crossed out a question because it might give too much information about Laurie and somebody else, so I just crossed that out. So why does he keep threatening him? Basically, he gets what he wants, but Jellyfish says, I'm not done with you yet.
Now, let me make sure I understand. So, like, you've got Jellyfish. Now, the tension between Jellyfish and the North Korean guard, Ko, I'll call him Ko for short. So Ko is, like, the tension there is simply because they just don't like they don't like each other. You put a North Korean, semi-loyal North Korean. I mean, he's more loyal to his family, and that's another one of the common threads that's woven through the book. So, like, the whole tension between loyalty to state and loyalty to family. So you've got this North Korean guard who is loyal to his country, and then you've got this South Korean special, you know, this South Korean operator who is obviously very loyal to his. I mean, you're just asking for trouble, and so that's the tension there. On the Chinese side, the tension that is exhibited there is between. Really, like that's more of an internal struggle with Zhang. So, and I purposefully made it such that you've got this very revenge motivated man in China, and ultimately you look at his life, you look at what he's got and what he's fighting for, and I won't give away too much, but I'll just say it's interesting how. I find it interesting how he's fighting for what? I mean, for nothing. He's fighting for something that has happened, like for revenge. It's unforgiveness. Mm-hmm. It's something that has happened well in the past, and his existing life is eaten up by it. And ultimately, you know, I'm not going to find out what I won't give away too many spoilers. But there's ultimately. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a price that is paid. Whereas with Ko over in North Korea and Red, both of them, they're very similar in their motivations. You know, Ko's fighting for something greater than himself. It's, you know, and he's fighting for what's left of his family, as is Red, and kind of the outcome and being able to, number one, see their struggle and see what they are fighting for and their personalities and see what ultimately their outcome is decidedly different than that of Zhang from China. And so I did that on purpose, but and that's just a thread that I wanted to weave through the story. And you know, it's one of those extras. Yes, there's a lot of action. There's a lot going on. The plot is complex, but ultimately, that's like one of just the extra layer down there. As I was writing the book, I was like, oh my goodness, you know, this is really interesting, and I tried to make sure I exploited that as much as I could throughout the book.
Well, it must have been interesting because once I got it, I just sat down and read it, and happens once in a while. Yeah. I sat down and read it, and I know I'm going to do that later because Dennis Palumbo just sent me Head Wounds, which is coming out in February. He just booked an interview. And then Carrie Waldman sent me Countdown. I read that in an hour and a half. And I was like, that's why I wake up with eye strain. It explains the eye pain in my right left eye every day when I get the motion, because when a book is that good, that's what's going to happen. But that's okay. I'm used to it. The part that really got me was really how you created the scenes with the mortar, the smells of the scenery. I felt like I was right there. I felt like I should have a weapon to take the other guys out. So how did you create that? Because I actually smelled the gunpowder, and I'm saying, oh, I'm getting nauseous here. The smoke's going in my eyes, and the scenery, I felt like I was right there. How did you create that, and what research did you have to do? Because it seemed like it was happening as I was reading it.
Well, I And that's a very critical scene, like what you're describing, and it depends on the pace, how much of that you can put in there. So I'll say this, like at that, like if you create a novel that is, you know, action, 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 every single chapter, then your reader is exhausted. It's good to have action, action, and then a little bit of a pause, and then action, action, a little bit of a pause, chance for some for time for someone to catch their breath. So during those little bit of pauses, one of the things that is very satisfying is to be able to make sure that your reader's anchored in the scene. So that's a very critical scene where there's a little bit of a pause. They have just gotten on, you know, set up within North Korea. They're at their strike point. And so, you know, how did I weave like those senses in? I mean, I have spent hours hunting before. I've spent, you know, time just in snow, low crawling. I've shot weapons quite a bit before. I know what gunpowder smells like. I've reloaded ammunition. I've actually made my own. I mean, one of the first businesses that I was involved in was actually making lead cast bullets. Now, those were largely for pistol, but nonetheless, I mean, I've got experience, you know, quite a bit in terms of firearms, so I can find my way around them fairly well. And if I'm not familiar with the firearm, then I can certainly do enough research on the internet to be able to sound like I know what I'm talking about. But as far as the sensory detail, a lot of that comes from either A, my experiences, and then B, an exercise that I do. So like when we're in those scenes, actually even in the fast-paced scenes, I still try to do this, although you put in less sensory detail in the fast-paced scenes, but you still need some to make sure you anchor the reader there. But like an exercise that I do is like I will just sit there in front of my laptop. I've got my hand on the keyboard, and I close my eyes, and I just imagine myself there, and it takes me a little while to get there sometimes, but I literally just put myself there, and I start thinking about, well, okay, what is it that I'm feeling? What is it that I'm seeing? And I'm feeling like the crust, the hard crust of the snow, and I'm feeling the like I know that like right below that snow that there is going to be, you know, from my own experiences, like once you dig through the snow, yes, you get down to that first layer of the pine needles. I did research. I've never been to North Korea. I don't know what their mountains are like, but you know, everything from I did research on their terrain, on what kinds of conifers are normally growing in a particular region. And so I, you know, well, spruce is something that's actually quite common there. So I was like, okay, I can weave that in. And so you dig through the snow as they're setting up the rifle, and you get down to that layer of spruce needles, and I know what that smells like. And so you kind of weave that in as best you can. And so some of it is, yes, A, my own experiences. No, I'm not an operator, and never have been. But you know, I do a good job of exercising my mind to be able to place myself in a scene. And again, sometimes it takes a while, but with my hands on the keyboard, I just start typing. It's almost like a rough draft, but I start typing what I feel, what I see, what I smell. Smell is actually very powerful. It's underused in most, but even just like a smell and how it can evoke memories in a scene, if you put in any sort of scent, and you can overuse it, but if you put in any sort of scent, it does a good job of taking the reader and actually putting them there, because it's one of those senses that unconsciously we pay a lot of attention to. And it can bring back memories, and henceforth when it does that, it kind of makes you feel like, yeah, I'm there. You know, it brings forward associations, and so scent is another one that I try to use. You know, that's my exercise.
Well, you did, because I had to put drops in my eyes after I read that scene. Seriously, I said my eyes are bothering me; they're burning from the smell. So, before I forget. Next Thursday is going to be extremely interesting, and I'm going to email the people on my panel show to find out if they want to bring in some real-life incidents. We're going to talk about how to present forensic evidence in a book, and D.P. Lyle is going to lead that discussion. FBI agent Mike Tabin's going to talk about what happens when the FBI gets involved. Bruce Coffin's going to talk about when the detectives and the police take the first shot at it. And Larry Thompson, who's a good friend and he's great, my favorite lawyer, is going to talk about how you present this in court. And since we had a terrorist attack yesterday and three people were killed in Walmart this morning in Colorado, they're not sure why this lunatic came in and just shot at shooting three people, I might decide to bring it into real life and say, in real life, if you were going to, you know, take over this case, how would you present the forensics, whatever. I'll have to ask my panel, but that's going to be fun. On the 14th, I have another great guy, Gerard DeMarini, the new Detroit. And 11/16, they very rarely ask anybody to be on my show. They usually ask me whenever, sometimes. There's a book about a high school. It's called The Mean. And it's about a real assistant principal and how we handle gangs. I started to read it. I wasn't sure. It's probably one of the best books that every educator should read. 11/21, the show is at 11 o'clock, Snifter of Death. And on the 27th, Down to No Good, the author created a character that's dead that comes back to life, and that's all I'll say about it. And I would be remiss if I didn't say on 12/6, the one and only John Land, Strong to the Bone. If you haven't read it,
fantastic.
It's the best one yet. And, of course, it's November, and it's time to start planning your Hanukkah, Christmas, and Kwanzaa gift list. So why don't you start with Recall and Reload and buy a million copies of those and buy some of John Land's books, Strong to the Bone. Start from the beginning of Caitlin Strong. I just finished, and it's not out yet, Demon Crown by James Rollins. Oh, my God, was that fantastic. Killing Season by Faye Kellerman was absolutely amazing. Mind Game by Iris Johansson. This is fun to do this job because I get them before they come out. It's so much fun. And I finished a book this morning by Sheldon Russell, the Bridge Troll Murders. It was very interesting about men that live on the rails. So that's what I've been up to just today. So we have this operation that's taking place, and we've got a guy named Cooley and I named Kay that are also in it. So how was Coe informed about what he had to do, and why did he constantly have difficulty in difficult situations? How did they keep him surprised when it was happening? Yeah, I know, trying.
So I had, what I did was, how Coe becomes involved is he's, like there's actually a black market in North Korea. Just, I mean, there has to be, because there's such a shortage of just the basic essentials. So black market, illegal, but in general, I mean, finding out information like this is always kind of a little bit spotty because North Korea is such a closed culture. But like, as best I can tell, it looks like the government officials generally turn a blind eye to it. Why? Because they need it too. And so the way that Coe's informed is he's shopping for a coat for his daughter. And the shopkeeper, now this shop is notoriously always empty, so it's always in the back of Coe's mind, like, how in the world is this guy staying open? So he's shopping for a coat for his daughter, and the shopkeeper is the one that actually, he has forged over time a relationship with Coe. Coe has come there many times, and that's kind of how you turn people. You have to forge some sort of relationship with them. And then you have to be able to figure out, okay, what's their motivation? Is their motivation money? Is their motivation power? Is it, what is it? And so in this case, it was Coe trying to help his sister and his daughter. So we know that Coe has become disenchanted with the government being able to help out his daughter. His daughter's lost her hand as a result of poor medical treatment. He's lost his wife already. Now he finds out through this store manager, who is an agent, a handler, or you know, a plant. We don't know exactly how, but he's working with the CIA, and so he's able to turn Coe, and he uses the fact that Coe is moving to, or going to soon be stationed, at Hwasong, at the Gulag, at the concentration camp, where his sister is. And so that's the motivation that he uses. So that's the way it goes down. We don't know exactly who this, again, we don't know exactly who the storekeeper is, what his full backstory is, but that's how he gets to, that's how he gets to Cohen, gets him turned. And it takes, you know, from what I understand from everybody that I've talked to about it, it takes a long time to develop an asset in country. I mean, years. And so essentially that's what has happened. The storekeeper has just, you know, maintained some sort of relationship, and at the appropriate time, he kind of showed his hand. And in this particular case, it turned out for the benefit, for the good. A lot of times, from what I hear, it doesn't. It's very difficult to turn somebody against their own country, especially one as controlling as North Korea. I mean, those guys are scared to death. It was interesting. You mind if I talk about some of the research I did for this real quick?
Oh, no, go right ahead.
Okay. So what I did was my great grandfather was an author, and he had a friend who wrote a book called Escape from Red China. And the gentleman's, the author's name is actually escaping me. But I'm flipping through like my grandfather's bookshelf, basically. I come across this book, Escape from Red China. I'm like, huh, what is this? So I start reading it. And it is absolutely phenomenally interesting. And I'll tell you the link that I have between, I know I'm talking about the book Escape from Red China and North Korea, but like, there's a linkage there, because whenever I see like North Korea, like for example, when something happens, when their last leader died, and I always get their names mixed up, but anyway, their leader died, and you see these people weeping, and I'm thinking, well, why are you weeping? The guy was a tyrant. I mean, no one likes him. I remember seeing, I think it was Doctors Without Borders, and how they were going into this place and basically giving people sight, performing some sort of basic surgery on certain people with certain ailments, and they're able to see. And what they're doing is then turning to a picture of their great leader and thanking the great leader, doing nothing, saying nothing to this doctor. And I'm like, how does this work? And so what I learned was reading this book, Escape from Red China, which is about when Mao Zedong came through and about all the incredible control and just fear under which these people lived. I mean, you know, political police walking around with notebooks, just eavesdropping and listening to people and making notes. And bottom line is I learned, you know what, that experience that the Chinese went through back in the 50s and 60s, very similar to and very parallel to what the Koreans are currently living under. So the difference with China is they're still communist, but they have evolved quite a bit. Korea is still, I mean, they're scary. They're the only hereditary dictatorship that, you know, that we kind of know of, and they're a nuclear power. It's a very scary system. And so that same fear, this, you know, again, I've never been to North Korea, but I finally, after reading that book, when the character was talking about how you had to express certain emotions at certain times and in order to be able to be thought as being loyal to the Communist Party, the same thing must be going on in North Korea. And you know what, if you're not expressing enough grief, then maybe you're not loyal to the party. You know, every house has a picture of the great leader, and basically they're not worshipped in a sense, but I mean we would reference it almost as a deity. I mean, it's incredible how much control and again, the mind control that goes on. And my heart goes out to them. It really does.
Just look at the soldiers when they're walking, and they have to walk in precision, and then they have to stand in front of him and clap when he comes out. It's amazing that no one has done anything to pop him off, but it wouldn't matter because there's another relative that'll take his place. And the fact that in this world there's a country like that, I feel sorry for the kids that go to school. And I would feel sorry if someone wasn't a perfect student. I would hate to see what they would do. If a kid even, I imagine they're terrified they wouldn't even think to talk back to a teacher. And I would imagine they'd be afraid to ask a question if they don't understand. And I mean, as an educator, that's scary. So we've got a few more minutes. We got my favorite character, Zhang, and he sort of is helping. How does he become involved in helping us, in a sense? And he was supposed to do something. Yeah, how does he try to help us?
Okay, so he is an electrical engineer. So he a low level electrical engineer. I'll say it that way. So he's kind of risen through the ranks. He's kept his head low. We've been given his backstory about how he has very violently actually taken care of a couple of the other people that he blames for his family's demise. And so we've got him then approached by Blue Tie, who's the businessman, and he's his handler, that relationship, unlike the one with the storekeeper and co, but this relationship was a little bit more, it wasn't as well developed, but nonetheless, it worked because of Zhang's just blind rage. He's blinded to the dangers of what may happen, and so he's looking for any excuse, and so he is he's an electrical engineer. He works on the coolers. Actually, data centers have to have a certain amount of cooling because they generate heat in order for the computers to work properly. And so he works on the cooling systems on data centers, and there's one in particular that they want him to be able to take out. And so the other ones, he's not involved in taking out. We don't know how those happen. But for this one, and he's provided some of the basic tools and just over time is able to build a device that is able to completely obliterate all the data within this data center, to the point where nothing would be able to be recoverable. And essentially that's what the CIA is trying to do. Some information has been leaked. Yes, there are things that are stored in people's minds, but largely it's stored on paper, and it's largely stored in data format now. And so just being able to obliterate several data centers would set their Ministry of State Security back, many years, just trying to reconstruct the information. And so it's not a foolproof step that the CIA is doing, but it's definitely putting them back several years in order to be able to recover all the information. So that's what Zhang is trying to do, is trying to just be able to realize his revenge.
Well, I just crossed out a question because it would give a spoiler. I just realized that the one before that's the question. I'm saying, no, that's not a good thing to ask, no. Okay, so two more questions because we have about 5 minutes. Explain the title Reload, which I understand, and tell us about, I snuck a peek. I did look at the back of the book before somebody took it. How dare they? But tell us about Recon, the next one. And how that's going to start before we ask the final question, which is in front of me.
Okay. All right. So then Reload, there's a saying that Red learned from his prior commander, and his saying was, when in doubt, reload. And so that gets woven into the story a little bit. And so that's where that particular name came from. And plus, I mean, it starts with R-E. And so we've kind of got a theme going here. I'm going to run out of titles that start with R-E at some point. But Reload seemed like a very good one. So it got woven in there. And that's how we came up with that particular title. Now, and I'm sorry, the second question,
tell us about Recon. That's your next one, right?
Oh,
is that the new title?
Okay, yes. Yes, Recon. Recon is it's different, just in the same way that Reload was different than Recall. Recon is also different. It's still a complex plot, not as complex as Reload. However, what I do with Recon is different. It's an exploration into who Red truly is, and it's very personal. The threat, it becomes very, very personal to him. There's still the international element, don't get me wrong. I mean, they're still going to far-flung areas. They're still, like, I'm weaving in Mossad, Jerusalem. There's still an op that takes place there. But a large majority of the book is actually dedicated to, gosh, what happens when, is Red still a star operator? Is he still a stud? When you strip everything away from him. And so what happens is, that's exactly what I do. I take all, he gets placed in a situation where he is fighting for his life. He's fighting for the life of actually his daughter, and he has no support whatsoever. He's out of reach of the debt. He cannot reach the debt. He's actually injured, and so it's an experiment to see, you know, what happens to this character when I take all his superpowers away from him? Does he still have the balls to be able to get, to be able to and the stamina to be able to come through victorious? And, well, I mean, he does. And he does very well. But it's more of an intimate look at Red. And so you're talking about, you know, those scenes that when they were getting set up in North Korea, for example,
mm-hmm.
with all those details, there's more of that. I mean, he is running through the Pikes Peak National Forest with a bullet in his rear end, and he's so ultimately it's very interesting. I've got some amazing characters that are super cool that you're going to absolutely love, and it ends up, you know, like I say, I don't disappoint. It ends up, it's an international plot, so he does end up going through to Jerusalem, and a lot of the threads are tied up. It's not, like I say, it's not in a complete neat bow, but it is most definitely like a lot of those questions that you're going, well, who the heck is Lori? You know, all those things are tied up at the end of the book three.
Well, as you're talking, I'm writing two things for a plot, for a panel show. This is my brilliance as I'm listening. I'm saying I'm going to set one up. I don't know if I'm going to do it in January or February, but I would like to set up a show that you could be on, and I'm going to ask several other authors, I haven't decided who, to talk about the century and how you set up the century, the scenes, like you did, where people feel like they're there. And the other thing, how do you create an international plot using North Korea and China and make it believable? And of course, that's just two of my questions that I thought of as I'm sitting here writing, because I think that would be really cool. And you have to promise me you cannot ever kill off Red Harmon. That's it. Nobody's allowed to kill off Red Harmon.
No.
I wouldn't say which, I killed off his main character, and I said, I'm not speaking to you ever again because I like this guy. So, final question. Where can we learn more about you and your work? And I just put your review and everything on some more of my sites. I've got so many sites on Facebook, I don't even know where to put them anymore. But, it's on Twitter, it's on LinkedIn, it's everywhere. And like I said, your Amazon thing is there. So where can everybody learn more about you and your work? And when am I getting the next one, and when is it coming out?
Oh, that great questions. I appreciate it, and I appreciate all your love and support. No, that's great. The best place is my website. It's just my name, David McCaleb, McCaleb. So Mike, Charlie, Alpha, Lima, Echo, Bravo, DavidMcCaleb.com, and that's where you can find more about me, when the books are coming out, the latest news, all the links for Twitter, Facebook, those things. So when is it coming out? August 2018. It's done. I mean, it's at the publisher. It's sitting on their desk, and it's awaiting their edits and their inputs at this point. But I mean, it is, when I say it's done, I mean it's written. It's been through many editing stages, both myself, both through independent editors. So right now, the editing staff at Kensington, they put their polishing touches on it, send it back, and so that's where it's actually at now. But they're not going to release it till August of 18, and then it'll be available just everywhere else, like everywhere that you're used to seeing it: Amazon, Barnes and Noble, those Amazon.com, I think it's BNN.com, whatever their website is.
They should send me an advanced reader's copy in June. This way, when they see you at the Thriller Fest in July, I could tell you what I think. That's I did that to Dennis Palumbo. I said, you're advertising your new book, Head Wounds. I said, and I don't have it. Why? And I felt bad because he said that you don't get a copy. He got two copies. So he gave me his publicist. I said, Dennis said to tell you to send it now. And I got it yesterday. I go like, now?
All good.
I mean, I have a pile inside of about 30 books. I still haven't finished. I don't know why. C.J. Box wrote Paradise Valley. I've got to read that. I've got Daniel Silver's book, A House of Spies, and I've got a book that everybody's got to read this. I mean, it's hilarious. I didn't finish it. It's called Football is Abolished, the 136th Amendment. And, I mean, if you really want to read something that's hilarious, it's hilarious. And how the President of the United States puts all his money into making sure that football comes back as long as people don't get hurt. You got to admit, I get, and I had no idea I was getting it. So thank you so very, very much. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
And would you be interested in being on one of my crazy panel shows?
Oh, I would love it. I'd jump at the opportunity. No, I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, I will. And I think I'm going to ask John Land also because he's really good with these international thrillers and he uses different places. So I will let you know probably January maybe?
Or
February. I will let you
it.
Know. Thank you so much, David. Everybody have a nice day. The sun is not out yet, but it's coming out. It's trying. Thank you, everybody. Have a nice day, and bye.